How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. Tons of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news, including full breakdown of last night's UFC 140 event. Break the apropos word there. A broken arm suffered by Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira when he refused to, well, he did tap after his arm was destroyed by Frank Mir in the semi-main event of the show. Also a submission, thankfully not a broken neck, in the main event with Lyoto Machida and John Bones Jones. We're going to talk about both of those fights and the rest of the card. Plus, there's a lot of things happening in UFC. Is the Brock Lesnar-Alistair Overeem match going to take place? Well, there's certainly a lot of speculation that it's not going to. We'll tell you why, give you some thoughts on the whole situation, and when we probably will know more. Also, what Dana said about the situation last night at the UFC press conference. We'll talk about George St. Pierre being out probably close to a year with a torn ACL. What is happening in February with the proposed GSP Nick Diaz fight? What are the new fights going to be? We'll talk about injuries in mixed martial arts and if there is a serious problem here that needs to be addressed. Also this afternoon is the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. The final TNA show, pay-per-view at least, of 2011. Give you the lineup for that show, plus a special mystery stipulation. At least if you're a person that only watches Impact on television. You don't even know what the stipulation is for the Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy match today. But we're going to tell you what it is. Because, quite frankly, radio is a better medium to get these stips out than Twitter. So we'll talk to you about that. Plus, Hulk Hogan suing Linda McMahon. We've got a new UFC weight class. We're going to talk about Rowdy Ronda Rousey, who was on our show last week and quite the character. New coaches for Ultimate Fighter. Talk about all of these strange WWE videos. Is this a return of Chris Jericho? What has he had to say about it? Well, we'll talk about that here on the show as well. So, tons of stuff coming up. We're going to get it kicked off right after the break. So, check it out. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're here to talk about UFC 140. That's how we're going to kick off this show today. And every UFC event, we do predictions. They end up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up there right now and check them out. And we were discussing before the break. We had not had it figured out. But, Mike, did I beat you at the predictions? Have you had a chance to check?
Let's see. I went 3-2 here. I'm checking right now, actually. Although, no matter what, I know I didn't finish as well as you because I picked Lyoto Machida. I picked Lyoto Machida and made Josh Nason, who wrote the article and put the predictions up on the page, made him put in there that I didn't believe that I thought Lyoto was really, truly going to win. But if John Jones was going to lose one, this was going to be it. And he didn't lose it. And I cannot see him losing for a long, long time.
Hmm. Well, looks like I went 3-2 as well. I missed Mark Hominick, who was knocked out in less than seven seconds by the Korean Zombie, which, quite frankly, that doesn't count. Because if the fight got a decent length of time, Mark Hominick probably would have beat the man.
That's
so I think I got that one right.
The show, for those who didn't see it, was, you know, you got a little bit of everything. And I mean, you really did. You got a little bit of everything, including a man walking out, throwing a wild punch, putting his arms down, and then immediately getting popped by the Korean Zombie after, obviously, the story about Sean Tompkins and his passing, the first time Hominick has fought since then. He's fighting in Canada. You get this big emotional thing, and boom, laid out in 7 seconds by the Korean Zombie. And, again, and that led the night off to just, again, having a little bit of everything.
Now, the interestingly enough, Brian Ebersole did win his fight, but on my card, he lost. But still, I'm taking credit for that one because I did predict in advance he would win. Tito Ortiz and Antonio Rogério Nogueira. I had predicted Nogueira, as did most everyone, except Josh Nason, by the way, who I'd like to note went 1-4 on this show. So I'm going to have fun with him this coming Wednesday night. But Tito, he got beaten, apparently, by elbows to the ribs. He was hurting bad, probably broken ribs. Dana White was not overly excited about the idea of him fighting again, but he's got one more fight on his contract, and he is Tito Ortiz, and I don't see a good explanation to not give him another fight. It wasn't like he was quickly knocked out standing, or he's like, you know, when Chuck and Vanderlei Silva, these guys that just have no chin. You know, it's not a situation like that anymore, although Vanderlei didn't win his last fight, so he's going to fight again. But I think with Tito, I mean, his wrestling didn't work. He got beat up on the ground. He got a rib pop, but it's not like, you know, permanent damage was done to him in this fight. So I think the right fight at the right time, the Tito Ortiz retirement battle, I actually think that'd do pretty well.
That's what I think. I think you give him, and you just basically frame it as no matter what happens, you put him in there with a guy who, if he beats him afterwards, no one can say, well, no, I want to see more Tito. No, you stick him in there, and it is basically, for all intents and purposes, a Lifetime Achievement Award fight. Give him somebody who odds are he can beat, do it in a place where, you know, and make a big deal out of it, and then, yeah, let the contract go out. But again, you know, it's not like a Liddell thing where his chin is shot, his body is shot. As he says, you know, he's fought with a fractured skull and 9 million other injuries that Tito's had, both legitimate and possibly a little bit embellished. But yeah, I would think give him one last fight unless he and Dana get into it in some bizarre degree again, which I cannot see happening.
And I was wrong about Rodrigo Nogueira and Frank Mir.
Yes, you were. Although I thought I was going to be wrong. I was seeing all of my picks go down the toilet when Nogueira rocked him, because Frank Mir, you know, he was really exceptionally quiet leading into the fight, and, you know, usually he makes a big presence and all this stuff, but I thought he was going to be knocked square on his butt in that first round, and then he turns around and not only gets the submission, but, again, I mean, gets it over Nogueira, which, again, as great as Frank Mir is, as a black belt in jiu-jitsu, I just didn't see, especially after getting rocked like that, him ever being able to submit Nogueira, and he is just Nogueira's kryptonite.
You know who Nogueira's kryptonite is Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. I want on the record that I was correct about this. He won this fight until he messed up. Listen, here's the deal with this. This guy... All right, first off, in the first fight, he knew he shouldn't have gotten into the fight with a staph infection. But he did anyway. So it was his fault he lost that fight. In this fight here, I can't remember where it was, but I was just reading something written by, or maybe I was listening to an interview, or I don't remember what I was doing, but it was someone talking about jiu-jitsu and how you can't get greedy. You got to get a position, and you've got to maintain the position, and you've got to be in control of the position before you go for your submission. You know, it's a very elementary sort of deal. And in this fight, Nogueira knocked this dude down, and he was pounding on him. And he was pounding on him, and Mir was doing nothing. And if he would have just kept pounding, he probably would have had, the referee probably would have stopped the fight. Because it was, I mean, the ref was right in there. Mir was turtled up. He was in the exact same position that guys were in elsewhere on this show where the fight ended up being stopped. But, oh no! Oh no. Big Nog had to go in there and decide, nah, I'm going to try and guillotine this guy for good measure. And what happened? He ended up flat on his back, and Mir grabbed his arm, and it was the end. You know, Frank Mir did not look good in that fight at all. He was big, he was slow, he just looked tired, he looked all beat up, he was gassed out in like a minute, he just looked terrible in this fight. But you know what? That's a big, strong dude. And he gets hold of your arm, even when he's tired, and you're in trouble. And that's exactly what happened, because Nogueira got greedy in that fight, and he paid for it. And it's heartbreaking for him. He wanted so bad to win this fight. He wanted so bad to go in there and beat Frank Mir. And he got in there, and he was beating on this dude. He was beating on this dude, and he got greedy, and that's the story of the game. So he did lose his fight. I'll accept my loss here, but I blame Nogueira. He messed this up for himself big time.
Well, at least he has, he knew that and had no problem torturing himself, because he wasn't tapping out to that Kimura. No, no. Frank Mir, well, just like Ronda Rousey, just like George St. Pierre should do, probably in most cases, Frank Mir took that man's arm home with him last night and broke it because Nogueira didn't give. And it was, again, if you were squeamish, if you don't like seeing such things, I don't know why you watch fighting, but if you are squeamish of such things, you don't want to see this because, well, it broke. And it always amazes me, you got to say this about anybody in MMA, and I forgot who Rousey just, who she just beat, her name, but any of these people, it is amazing. Tim Sylvia did it too when Frank Mir, I think, popped his arm. It's amazing how these guys, you have so much adrenaline, and these people are so tough where they just shake it off. Can you imagine in everyday life getting your arm broken in the way that Nogueira did and just being able to lay there and not absolutely go nuts and in shock?
Well, I don't know. I've never had that happen, but maybe he didn't immediately feel it. Strange things happen when you get hurt.
That's where your mind, it's the whole thing. Your mind can play tricks on you, and hopefully he was playing tricks on Nogueira because, again, it was a ugly, ugly-looking break.
And by the way, I don't want anyone listening to this that's a fan of Nogueira to get mad at me, because you can't tell me that he didn't wake up this morning and go, he's just kicking himself today. Kicking himself for what happened in that fight last night. Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the main event of the show, which was John Jones and Lyoto Machida, which, as you noted, you wanted the public to know that you did not fully endorse the pick. But you did say that if Jones was losing any one time in the near future, this was going to be it. So did he almost lose? Did he get in trouble? We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Plus the rest of the card, a lot of UFC news and pro wrestling. All coming up here in the next 2 hours. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking about UFC 140 and the main event of the show, John Bones Jones defending the 205-pound title against Lyoto Machida, the karate expert, and Josh Nason. He actually got this one right, believe it or not. But Oliver Kopp and Mike Sempervivi did, in fact, pick Machida. And Mike? Would you like to explain to the public why you picked Lyoto Machida in this fight?
I saw Rashad Evans in Philadelphia, and I cannot tell you, he looked like a zillion dollars. I mean, he looked fantastic in his first fight coming back, beating he looked great. That said, I know Phil Davis, I've been a big fan of his, saw him wrestle in college. I'm a huge fan of Phil Davis. There's lots of guys at 205 that, I like watching fight. I don't see any of them beating John Jones. He is just too freakish, and I figured, you know what, if there was going to be one fight, maybe he was looking ahead towards Rashad. Maybe Lyoto's weird, wonky style that he could have, maybe he'd be able to play angles, and even though Bones is, with his reach and his style, does that better than really anybody in that class. Machida is very dangerous, and I just thought with the styles, with just maybe looking past him, just how, unique Lyoto is, if there was going to be one that Jones is going to lose, this was going to be the one, and he didn't lose it. And in fact, the most overrated thing that you'll hear coming out of this fight is John Jones was actually put into trouble. Yeah, sort of. He was sort of put into trouble. He actually got hit with a couple of punches. He actually tried to play Lyoto's game a little bit in the first round and actually gave Lyoto the first round. But with that said, that wasn't trouble. That's as close as, you know, trouble has been to John Jones, but he didn't even have trouble with Lyoto. And I just can't foresee, with the exception of Rashad Evans, which, again, I don't, as great as Rashad's wrestling is, John Jones is such a physical, ridiculous freak that I just, until somebody beats Jones, or he beats himself, I don't see who's supposed to stop him.
I like you. I say he kind of played his game. They did karate in that opening round. There's another one there that I thought was just kind of wacky. You don't go into a fight and play the other guy's game, especially if the other guy has been playing his game since he was three. You know, John Jones in there, and he's doing these wacky spin kicks, and he's doing these front kicks, and...
Well, and there's the confidence thing with Jones where, okay, maybe he's too big for his own britches. And again, he played Lyoto's game and gave him the round, but it's not like he was embarrassed at all during it.
Well, he learned his lesson when he came out for round two and just took him right down and beat the crap out of him. But, you know, go in there and do karate with Lyoto Machida, especially when, you know, Lyoto is, he's getting inside and he's throwing some combos. And meanwhile, you're just standing there doing these wacky spin kicks that miss by 10 feet. So he got pounded the first, I don't say he got pounded, but I had Machida winning the first round in this karate battle. And then in the second round, Jones apparently decided, what am I doing karate for? And he went out there and he took him down and he pounded the crap out of him, busted him open with an elbow to the eye. And then Machida stood up and Jones put him in a standing guillotine, kind of a modified, I guess is how they'd say it in pro wrestling, a modified standing guillotine, and pushed his forearm right to the dude's throat. Guy went unconscious. This was a beating. He put a beating on this guy after round two started.
Yeah, I felt bad for Machida at the end there, too, because it, for those who didn't see it, you know, they're standing up, and Machida's back is against the cage, and Jones has got this modified guillotine on, and John McCarthy is standing to the right of Machida, and Machida's, or I'm sorry, to the left, and Machida's left hand is on John Jones, like, you know, trying to push off the choke, which made it look like that he was kind of fighting back if you were only looking at it from that angle. The problem was, on the other side, you see Machida's right arm go numb, and his arm was just stuck up there, and Jones, they finally waved the fight, and Jones drops him to the ground, and it was like, it just left a heap of a man was left in the ring. And again, that fight, that style of fight with that finish, we have been very lucky over the last couple of shows, the last pay-per-view, and obviously the Ultimate Fighter finale, we have had some incredible finishes to fights.
So, still champion, John Jones. And it was funny you noted that maybe John Jones was looking forward to his fight with Rashad Evans. There's no guarantee that fight's taking place, thanks to our upcoming UFC on Fox event. And that show is coming up in January. It is UFC on Fox 2. I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but we've got some new matches announced. Of course, the main event, Phil Davis could be the spoiler, against Rashad Evans, also Chael Sonnen and Mark Munoz, and Michael Bisping is returning to face Damian Maia. And your thoughts on that card?
Again, if you were going to call me crazy, if you were going to put Bisping on there, I don't know. I mean, Maya's name, I guess, was bandied about anyway to face Sonnen. I don't know. I just, if you were going to do that, why not just do Sonnen and Bisping? Because, again, the sensitivity of Silva defending the title and having the right opponent for him to draw on pay-per-view with, at least if Chael Sonnen loses, which is one of the big pay-per-views you have left, especially now that George St. Pierre is hurt, and we'll get to that later, when that was going to be such a huge fight, obviously, Bisping and Silva won't do the same, but at least it's something you can justify having on pay-per-view and figure it's going to get, you know, 350,000 pay-per-view buys, if not more, depending on what's on that card. So if you were going to risk that anyway, you know, at least for the money one, I don't know. I think they made a mistake there. I think you can justify the other one more between Davis and Jones. But I mean, Dean Davis and Evans. But the other one, to me, it makes absolutely no sense if they were both going to be on it anyway.
Big topic of conversation last night at UFC was what is going on with Alistair Overeem and Brock Lesnar. And I don't know what's going on. I do know, I've heard some rumors, and granted these are only rumors, but the rumor is that both men were asked to take a drug test, steroid test, which Las Vegas... You know, they've done out-of-competition testing here and there. But for those of you that have followed the out-of-competition drug test story, when it first came out that Nevada was going to do this out-of-competition testing, I thought, well, this is going to change the sport completely. They can test you at any time, whether you're fighting or not. But, of course, as it turned out, that's not really what happened. They ended up testing guys a month before their fight, almost without fail. If you were a main eventer, you knew that a month before the fight you'd be tested. So... it became an IQ contest again. You know, you always knew, okay, I got to be off everything a month before the fight. Then maybe I can jump on something real quick, but make sure that I'm clean by fight day. Easy. So, apparently they asked both guys to take a drug test, and Overeem immediately flew to Holland. His mother was very sick, he noted. So, the rumor yesterday was that he was out of the fight. Now, Dana White at the press conference said there was nothing to these stories. The fight is taking place as scheduled. But that certainly didn't stop the rumors from gaining steam. And the story last night was that, I guess, some sort of something's going down Monday. Overeem has to speak to the commission or something. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is. But the rumor is that if he is off the show, he will be replaced by Frank Mir. And it's funny because, like, last night on the show, Joe Rogan was talking about, oh, Frank Mir, man, look at him. He looked great. He broke this dude's arm. Actually, at the end of the show, they said it was possibly dislocated, which I thought was hilarious. Possibly? It was definitely dislocated. I saw it with my two eyes. But he said he looked great. And I'm thinking, okay, that was a great submission, and he destroyed this dude's arm, and this may be the last fight of Nogueira's career because of this injury. However, as noted, until he broke this dude's arm, he looked terrible. He looked out of shape. He looked tired and slow and sluggish. So you're going to put that guy in the ring with Brock Lesnar in 3 weeks? That sounds like a terrible idea.
Well, it depends on how you look at it, because one could say that sounds like a great idea, because you don't want Frank Mir beating Brock Lesnar, because, well, you want Brock Lesnar. There's nothing against Frank Mir, but considering where the UFC's at right now, and I remember talking last week about, you know, could it get any worse for the UFC as far as injury changes and things like that with main events? Could it be worse next year? I guess technically we're still in 2011, so maybe next year is looking up, but again, under the circumstances... I'm amazed they couldn't find anybody else, but if they want to, you know, like, who else do you have to replace a pay-per-view, you know, except for him? You couldn't do Josh Barnett. He wouldn't be ready anyway. I mean, there's no other notable heavyweights out there, so yeah, you got to replace him the best you can, and why not? And, you know, you got a storyline already with the third fight.
Well, you do have a storyline with the third fight, that's for sure. But can you actually make that a number one contenders match if you just throw Frank Mir in with 3 weeks' notice?
Well, no, you can't. With that said, I mean, but I guess I wouldn't bring it up at all, but I guess, you know, you say during that fight, too, you lay out who the heavyweights you have left are. You know, you got a big question mark over Overeem, you know. Carwin's out, you know, Velasquez is going to be out for a little bit, and you have Dos Santos. It's like, well, that's your only options, and at least those are your only options. As bizarre as I don't mean to discount Lesnar and Mir, but obviously, you know, and Nelson, I guess, would also be there. So it's like, you know, what else are you supposed to do as far as, you know, if there's going to be another heavyweight title match? It's just, it's going to be one of those things that everybody has to accept.
Well, apparently, Alistair is set to meet with the Nevada State Athletic Commission tomorrow. So something's happening. I don't know what it is. But something's happening. So anyway, we'll have more tomorrow at WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to head to a break. We'll talk more when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Lots of stuff to talk about today, and as noted, for more, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates, tons and tons of radio shows. If you're listening to this show, maybe for the first time, and you like what you hear, and we haven't even started talking about pro wrestling yet. I don't know if that'll make you more or less interested in the show, but regardless, we do this every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. If you like this show, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours available in the archives for you to listen to right now. If you've got a long commute to work, if you've got a job that allows you to listen to audio and you've got nothing better to do during the day, if you just enjoy hearing about what's going on in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every single day, this is the place for you. A subscription is $10.99 per month. That's it. Makes a great Christmas gift, by the way, for yourself or someone else. Every day we do a new show, 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. I did 4 shows on Thursday. 4 radio shows in one day. So if you had nothing to do on Thursday, well, we gave you something to do. And if that's not enough for you, if you have so much stuff to do that 15 to 20 radio shows per week is not enough, all you got to do is jump into our archives. Every show we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available for you right now. It's noted thousands and thousands of hours of audio wave interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, including guys like Bobby Lashley, one half of one of the biggest main events in WWE history, although granted, Donald Trump and Vince McMahon drew that number. Had Stone Cold Steve Austin on the show, Bruno Sammartino, Ric Flair has been on the show. The list goes on and on. The archives are fully searchable. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You will never be without wrestling or mixed martial arts audio if you sign up today. And again, it's only $10.99. Sign up once. When the month is over, if you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But, I've said it many times, if you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription. I guarantee it. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You can hear more from Mike as well, host of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up there on the website. But, back to the news here today. Speaking of the website, actually, as soon as this show goes off the air, we're going to be doing live running play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view, the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view, which is coming up at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And after the show, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up with a brand new audio running down that event in detail. So another hour of audio later today only for subscribers, talking about the results of the TNA pay-per-view. And Mike, you will not be on that audio, but will you have watched the show by that point?
I think I'm actually going to.
Oh, my God.
I haven't been keeping up with TV the last couple of weeks, but I've heard it's better, which doesn't mean much to me at this point after years and years of this stuff, but okay, I'm going to watch the pay-per-view tonight. Now, I guess I'm still at more an advantage than the normal TNA watcher. They're very, very loyal viewers that they have every week on TV because they don't tell them what stipulations are going to be for certain matches, but at least they do it for online purposes.
That's right. Last night, actually, it was yesterday morning, I think it was. Dixie Carter sent out a Twitter post saying that there was a brand new giant stipulation for the pay-per-view. Now,
on Twitter.
On Twitter, everybody. Think back to, I don't know. Let's think back to 1995. If you had a match with two main eventers going head-to-head, and the stipulations were that, let's just say it was, obviously they're not stars of this level in TNA, but let's just say it was the Ultimate Warrior against Randy Savage with Elizabeth. And the stips were that if Warrior lost, he had to leave the company. And if Randy Savage lost, either he or Elizabeth had to leave the company. Can you imagine how big that would be and how excited people would be for the pay-per-view? Well, that's the stipulation for the Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy match. If Jeff Hardy wins, he's number one contender to the title, and either Jeff Jarrett or Karen Jarrett must leave the company. They will be fired from the company by Sting. And if Jeff Jarrett wins, Hardy, he must leave TNA. Those are the stipulations. And the firing of Jeff or Karen was added on Twitter yesterday. No mention of it on television. It was added on Twitter. So, there you go. How about that?
Well, it must really mean something then, you know?
They
must really want me to get into it then. If it's so important and it's so believable that these mega stars, one of them would leave for a while, is this like the Hyuk Hyuk Durr thing over like the wink and a nod of like, well, you know, Jarrett's going to be going back to Mexico or something like that, or I don't know what it is. This is what pissed me off so much about Raw on Monday, and what pisses me off about TNA is just more so than anything, and it wasn't really talked about this week at all, it was that dumb, you know, everybody watching is an idiot. You know, Hyuk, 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 you know, wait till we, you know, they tell you everything. Cena, you know, hey, Dolph, are you going to be a cheerleader tonight? Are you going to be a spirit, you know, are you going to be a caddy? What are you going to be tonight? You know, Punk at the end with the, okay, the table's out here. This is all a charade. Let's get to fightings now. I hate that. It's something that TNA has been doing. I know what I'm watching is professional wrestling. Got it. I know. That's why I'm watching it. You don't have to insult me the whole time and do the wink nod garbage because you're not good enough actors to do it anyway. And it's tough stuff like that that just drives me absolutely nuts.
This is what she wrote. I just searched for her Twitter. She said, Sting just called me with an added, an additional stip, I think, ADDL, I presume that's additional. Sting just called me with an additional stip for tomorrow's Jarrett versus Hardy pay-per-view cage match. If Jarrett loses, either he or Karen will be fired. That's what she wrote. That was a whole announcement. I should add, by the way, that Dixie Carter has 107,601 followers. Now, granted, that is more than I have. At Brian Alvarez on Twitter, by the way. But that would mean that if every single person that follows Dixie on Twitter read that tweet, and granted, that's unlikely, because I don't think all 107,000 have her tweets going to their phone. So you'd actually have to go up to Twitter to see what she had to say. But if every single one of her followers read that tweet, that is one out of every 15 people that watch Impact on television this past Thursday night. 1/15 of the audience has been alerted to this stipulation.
And you know what?
No one sees this for what it is.
Like random porn ones anyway.
Yeah, I just don't understand this idea of, well, there is a possibility that something happened. Something happened in the last couple of weeks, and maybe Jarrett's fed up, or Karen just is pregnant, or I don't know what'll happen. Who knows what's going on? But maybe you know what? Maybe Jeff Jarrett's leaving. I doubt it. But if I recall correctly, he debuted on January 4th 2 years ago. Maybe he is done. I don't know.
Did you get an email from them?
Did I get an email from them?
Yes. Or a press release from them?
I don't think so.
And that's the whole thing. You know, if something did happen legit, then you should be banging the drums of
kidding me? They don't,
out of nothing.
They don't send me anything like that.
But I mean, you know what I mean when they say, because WWE is always classic with that. When they want everybody to know something, they flood out these BS business wire PR things. Well, if it was that big of a deal, then, you know.
I'm saying, you mean the stipulation. I thought you were talking the behind the scenes thing.
But if something had happened where, yeah, you put the stipulation out there of like, you know, it could be, I just, because again, you put it on Twitter, so what? Again, who sees it? It's not that big of a deal. And again, nobody cares. Now that people have heard it, it's like, does anyone care enough to take this seriously?
No, and you know, I was thinking about this in the car yesterday, of all things. And let's just go back to that potential match when I was a kid. Randy Savage versus Ultimate Warrior, with Savage, Warrior, or Liz's career on the line, if that ever happened. And I was a little kid, that'd be such a big deal. I mean, all my friends would be talking about it, you know?
Would have racked up a bunch of money calling the 900 line.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't have, but, you know.
Well.
But, you know, there was a... Here's the whole deal. wrestling has done itself a massive disservice by killing stipulations. And I mean, that's not news to anybody here. But when you kill stipulations, then you throw out stipulations and nobody cares. Now, the key is that nobody cares. It's one thing when, like, I'm just going to talk about the, you know, the it's a rough time right now in terms of the economy. Our economy is not recovered. Okay, so people don't have the kind of disposable income that they've had in the past. When people have a lot of money to spend, then when an event is coming up, maybe they'll spend money on it, even if they don't care. You know, it's like, okay, there's a TNA pay-per-view this weekend. Do I care? Nah, not really. But what the heck? I got extra money. I'm going to buy this show. That's all fine and good when you've got a strong economy. When the economy is weak, then when someone says there's a TNA pay-per-view this weekend, and you go, well, I don't care, you're not spending money on something you don't care about. That's the whole key. When money is tight, you only buy things that you care about. So yes, I'm sure there was a point when the economy was rolling along where stipulations meant nothing, but people still bought the shows because, hey, they're wrestling fans. They got nothing else to do on the Sunday, and it doesn't matter. They got extra money, so they buy the shows. But when the economy sucks and you kill your stipulations, then it's a double whammy because nobody cares about your stipulations or the matches on the show, and they don't have the money to throw around, so they're not just going to buy a show that they don't care about. And that's where we're at right now. I was really thinking about that the other day. I was thinking, okay, if this weren't my job, I mean, if I just had, you know, X amount of dollars to spend over the course of this week and month, and one of my options was to spend $44.95 on a pay-per-view with a bunch of stips I don't care about, of course I'm not buying that show. And the death of stipulations is just like, it's even worse now. I mean, it would be bad enough if things were going along great, but it's even worse when times are tough, you know, because a stipulation is supposed to be something that makes you care about a match more than you would have otherwise. You know, it's something that's supposed to add interest in the match. But when nobody believes or cares about the stipulations, then they mean nothing. And honestly, who cares at all about this stipulation? Who really thinks, let's just say that Jeff Jarrett gets fired. Who cares? Who really thinks he's never going to be back? Who thinks he's not going to be back in 2 months? Same with Karen Jarrett, you know? It's just sad state of affairs.
That's putting it mildly, but that's pro wrestling killing pro wrestling. You know, that passion and, you know, that people aren't going to go out of their way. You know, it's a busy world. People aren't going to go out of their way to check you out if, you know, especially when TNA, you've got all those chances over and over and over again. We're seeing with WWE, it was copied, whether they've intended to or not. They've copied a bunch of what TNA has done and just completely alienated people with. They're doing the same things now from theme pay-per-views to shucking it up too much. This is a sad state of affairs right now because, again, we'll still watch it because we've been entrenched since the early 80s, mid-80s. What about everybody else you're trying to grow into these fans? I mean, even if you come back in a little while, will you actually have anybody in the long term 10 years from now? Eh?
Your child's answering that question, Mike.
That's it, yeah. See, he's not watching it.
All right, everybody, we're going to do a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the card for this show. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael P. Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com.
And the P stands for quality.
That's right. We're here talking about the TNA pay-per-view, which is coming up this afternoon. We spent quite a while ranting about the death of stipulations and how that's killed pro wrestling. But we got a card to go over here, and very little time in this segment. So let's start from the top. Why not? You got a minute to give me your thoughts on the 30-minute Iron Man match for the TNA title, Bobby Roode and AJ Styles.
Won't even need a minute for that. 30-minute Iron Man match, why? Don't get it. Bobby Roode, they've wasted the turn. They wasted a lot of TV and programming. with all of that said, it's going to be a good match. Why? Because it's Bobby Roode and it's AJ Styles, so that'll be cool, but I don't know what they're going to do to mix it up and make a 30-minute Iron Man match special.
Yeah, I don't know why this needs to be a 30-minute Iron Man match. I don't know why they can't just go on television and have a great match. I guess because the idea is you got to have a stipulation for the match. Biggest thing to me is I don't think Bobby Roode needs to be doing a bunch of jobs right now.
They got to have a stipulation world title match.
Mm-hmm. He did a job on television on Thursday. Obviously, he's going to do some more jobs during this Iron Man match. I don't get it. It's one of those things where if you look back at the business Iron Man matches have done, they don't do well. So don't do them. Unless you got like a really strong semi-main event. Which
you know what it shows me too with Iron Man matches, Brian?
What's that?
A lot of times when it's about falls, why not just save it and make it a Texas Death Match, which was all about how many falls you could get on a guy, and you know, and the count to 10 and all that stuff. When the history of Iron Man matches, as you said, it doesn't work. I don't know why they keep going back to these things.
The last time they did a Texas Death Match, they didn't even know if you were supposed to ring the bell or not between falls.
Well, all right, TNA's a poor example, but I mean, if somebody competent were around.
Well, let's deal with that when they actually have somebody competent around. Although, I've noted, the show's been better lately. I know that's hilarious to say given all the ranting and raving we've been doing here, but it is true. The show has been better lately. But a couple of things have taken a step backwards. We're going to head to the hourly break. When we come back, more. Another hour of this show, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week and every hour here on the show by Michael Sempervivi, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, here on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And speaking of WrestlingObserver.com, in about an hour, live running play-by-play of the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. Get all the results of the show as it's going. And afterwards, also at WrestlingObserver.com, myself and Dave Meltzer, I shouldn't say free because it's not, a members-only radio show coming up later on this evening. We'll be running down all of the results of the show and talking all of the news this weekend, as we're going to be doing for 3 straight days on the website. Daily radio shows up at WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up if you want more. It's $10.99, thousands of hours of audio. But we're back here for this program here, talking the lineup for TNA Final Resolution. And Mike, the semi-main on the show, believe it or not, is listed, at least on Wikipedia, as Mickie James versus Gail Kim. What?
You know what? I'll be okay with that. If that's actually a good match, I'll be completely fine with that.
I think it's going to be a good match. Mickie has been very good lately. Two good matches in a row on television. Gail Kim, good worker. I think it's going to be a fine professional wrestling matchup. I don't really have a prediction. I predict Bobby Roode retaining the title, and I predict, I'll predict Gail Kim retaining the title here as well.
Yeah, I actually will too, and they're two people that, you know, when they are motivated, especially Gail Kim, you know, and again, this is their chance to shine. That's why she went back there anyway. So it's a good time to, you know, actually have some, you know, old Joshi pride again and actually have a good women's match.
Joshi pride.
Why not?
All right. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, we have more of this card to talk about here, including a steel cage match where guaranteed somebody involved in this match is going to be fired from TNA, whatever that means. Quite frankly, it probably doesn't mean much. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here looking at the TNA Turning Point, Final Resolution, pay-per-view lineup. Hey, his names all run together after a while, much like the WWE B shows. But we're looking at the lineup of the program here. We've talked about Bobby Roode, AJ Styles. We've talked about Mickie James, Gail Kim. And now we are at the steel cage match for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. The number one contenders match, in a sense. If Jeff Hardy wins, he gets a shot at the winner of Bobby Roode versus AJ Styles at the Genesis pay-per-view. If he loses, he's out. Out! Of TNA. Added on Twitter yesterday. Twitter, by Dixie Carter, is a stipulation that if Jeff Jarrett wins, Hardy must leave TNA. But if Jarrett loses, either himself or Karen will be fired. Fired, I say, by Sting. This is a cage match. And to ensure that Karen Jarrett does not scale the cage and climb inside with two grown men to interfere, she's going to be handcuffed to Sting at ringside. I don't know who put this thing together, but this is a mess.
You hear the older guys from the business say it over and over again that sometimes less is more. Talk about stipulations and stipulations that don't mean anything. It's a number one contendership match in a steel cage under Mexican rules, if I'm not mistaken, where the loser is going to be left into the ring. It's an escape the cage. Now we have people being fired. We have Sting handcuffed to Karen Jarrett at ringside as well. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I like how in your booking, he's handcuffed to the Amazon.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's amazing that Sting, I know he's a little bit older now and everything, but just he can't stop Karen Jarrett, especially not when her man is going to be in a steel cage.
You got it.
Unreal.
I don't write this stuff.
Jeff Hardy wins.
I think Jeff Hardy wins. I don't know what they're doing with the stips. I mean, I don't even know why I bother thinking about this. You used to be able to think about this because it was like, okay, logically, what's going to happen here? What makes the most sense? Now it's just like, meh, who knows? Maybe she's on the PTA now. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Jarrett still got the AAA title, right?
He is still the AAA Super Mega Heavyweight Champion, yes. That's what they call the belt, the Super Mega Heavyweight Champion. Heavyweight being two words.
Imagine if Brodus Clay was down there, what would they call it?
Well, it'd be the super-duper mega heavyweight title.
That's amazing. Amazing. Two guys who also don't need all these stipulations.
Is AAA the minor leagues in baseball?
Well, it's the right before you hit the pros. That's
I see. So single A is the worst?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that ruins my idea. I was thinking somebody needed to open up in Mexico is just A.
Well, they could open up as, like, lowercase a.
I see. Anyway. So, yeah, there you go. That's the cage match. We've also got a tag team championship battle with Crimson and Matt Morgan against D-Von and D'Angelo De Niro, which, oh, my God, where to start? So, Crimson and Matt Morgan hated each other, and so they had a match, and after the match was over, I can't even remember the finish, but it doesn't matter. The point was they kept brawling afterwards, and a million guys came down, and they kept brawling, and they brawled and brawled and brawled and brawled and brawled and brawled and brawled. Then the next day on TV, they're friends, and they team up together, and they beat D-Von, they beat Hernandez and Anarquia, the Mexican America. They win the tag team titles. So, on another path, we've got D-Von and D'Angelo De Niro, who, for about 100 years, have been on and off together in feuding. D-Von's sons like the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro. D-Von doesn't like the kids hanging around the Pope. But then sometimes he's best buddies with the Pope, which begs the question why the kids can't hang around with the Pope. Then sometimes they're fighting, then sometimes they're together. But there's like, you know, three or four television shows in between each page of the story. So, finally, they announce D-Von and D'Angelo De Niro are getting their shot against Crimson and Matt Morgan. And, of course, they got to bring back the kids and muddle up the storyline on the last TV before this tag team match. The kids got involved and saved the Pope, and D-Von got angry, and there's all this drama. And yeah, it's just like, I figured something like this would happen during the match, or maybe something would happen. I don't know. I just think too much about this stuff. The way they did it, it's just like, you know, everybody did their role well. The kids did great. D-Von cut a great promo. The Pope did a great promo. But, like, the timing of it was just like, why is this happening right now? Why is this happening right before the match? How does this make me care about the match at all? The answer is none of the above. Nothing. None of these things make me care about this match. It muddles the whole thing for me. But, so now it's like, you know, before you could go, well, you know, Crimson and Morgan probably going to win. The kids will get involved, blah, blah. Maybe that'll still happen. But at this point, it's like, I've seen the kids involved. I've seen the kids with Pope. I've seen D-Von flip out. I mean, it's just like, I've seen it all. So what are you going to give me at the pay-per-view that I don't know. I'm not into this match at all. Let's just put it that way.
What you're going to get are the Sons sticking with D-Von and the Pope. And they help beat up Crimson and Matt Morgan, and they clear the ring, and at the end, they all sing We Are Family.
Yeah.
Look how you started that whole thing off, too, by saying Crimson and Matt Morgan hated each other.
Yes!
There's tag team wrestling in 2011. Another WWE, a great TNA. It's been great for TNA over the last few years to always do that one, and WWE took it with Swagger, and Dolph Ziggler, you know, just have the two guys. Makes no sense why they hate each other. They have no idea why they're partners, and now they're partners.
You know, it's one thing when you got, like, Jack Swagger, you know, or Bobby Lashley is another great example, where big jacked-up guy, go in there and he'd throw people around. And if WWE claimed he was a four-time NCAA champion, you know, if you looked it up, you'd find out that wasn't true. But watching him and seeing him move and everything, you'd go, okay, I believe that. You know, I can suspend my disbelief. But when I had to watch D-Von Dudley go out there and say, you know, Crimson and Matt Morgan, you guys have what it takes to be one of the great tag teams of all time. I realize this sport is all about hyperbole, but I howled with laughter. Like, really? I can't even start to begin to suspend my disbelief with such a preposterous statement. But I guess that's what you do in pro wrestling.
Well, wait till you find out on a future episode of Impact that Joel Gertner is actually the godfather of those kids, and they're going to bring back Big Daddy Dudley.
Really? I did not know that. Kid Cash and Austin Aries for the X Division title. Kid Cash and Austin Aries are two of those guys where it's a fake sport. But they like to go around with that tough guy attitude. You know, the bold Bob Holly. I'm going to just give you a beating here in this match. And there's always that part of me that's just like, man, go to MMA. But no, they're still pro wrestlers. But here's two guys that have no problem putting a beating on someone else. And now they're going to be in the ring together putting a beating on each other. So I'm actually excited for this match. I may be one of 10 in the entire world. But you know, Austin Aries is laid a whooping on guys here and there, and Kid Cash has done the same, and now they're going to be in the ring with each other. So what's going to happen? Is neither man going to lay a beating on each other? Are they going to have a beating contest? What are we going to have in this match? I'm intrigued.
Hopefully no Jesse Sorensen running in for some reason or some sort of wackiness at the end, but there probably will be because it's TNA. But yeah, again, two pros going at it. I mean, Kid Cash and Austin Aries is going to be really good. And I would, again, I don't know where the Motor City Machine Guns are. I can't remember what the deal is with Saban. But, you know, Aries and Cash is like, they let them have a wrestling match. You know, let them beat each other up and just don't have any wackiness attached to it. And again, I would not change the title here either because Austin Aries is the perfect holder for that X Division title and trying to give it back some more credibility.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we got three big matches to talk about here for TNA Final Resolution. So don't change that dial, everyone, or shut off your internet connection. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. And we are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here live for the next 40 minutes, Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet. The amazing machine that is the internet. Or whatever it is, at WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking about the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We got three more big matches. We've gone over most of the cards, so if you missed it, well, we'll have a replay of the show tonight up at WrestlingObserver.com, so head up there and check that out. If you ever miss part of the show, it's usually up around midnight, early Monday morning. But three matches left. Robbie E versus Eric Young for the show that's coming up moments after we go off the air, live on pay-per-view from the Impact Zone in Orlando, Florida. Live running play-by-play on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. And Dave Meltzer and I will be up later with a special radio show running down this program only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. So if you like this show, don't miss out. Might want to sign up. But Robbie E and Eric Young for the TNA television title. What are your thoughts on this battle, Semper Vivi?
I'll say this is the only title change of the night, or this would be my only title change of the night.
You're going to put the title back on Eric Young?
Sure.
Why?
Because why have it on Robbie E? Hasn't the jersey thing kind of run its course?
Because Robbie E is awesome. You haven't been watching.
He's so awesome he doesn't need a wacky TV title then, does he?
You have not been watching this show of late, Mike. Robbie E is my favorite wrestler.
Okay, how did you come to this?
I watched him in the ring!
So of all the guys, I mean, Samoa Joe is technically still there, right?
God bless Samoa Joe, but I enjoy Robbie E matches way more than Samoa Joe matches at this point. Let me tell you why. Samoa Joe goes in there, he does some of his old spots, and then he just gets beaten like a drum. Every single time. I don't even know why this guy is still there.
It's true.
It's depressing. Robbie E is everything I loved about wrestling when I first started watching it. He is a crazy, wacky character. He does the most comedic, goofy overselling. I mean, you just got to watch. Next time TNA is on, I want you to watch Robbie E. And if you don't come out of the match a fan of Robbie E, then I don't know what's wrong with you anymore, Semper Vivi.
I'll do it tonight.
Do it tonight. Do it tonight. You will fall in love with Robbie E tonight if you actually just watch him work. Forget the stupid gimmick and everything like that. Just watch Robbie E and his wacky, not only selling, but when he's in control, how excited and bombastic he is. He's the best. Actually, he's the second best. The best guy, I'm not even joking right now, everybody, when I say this. I know some of you are going to think that I'm being facetious, but I'm being serious here. The best thing in wrestling today is James Storm. I am not kidding. Go back and if you did not watch Impact this past Thursday night, you must watch the segment with Kurt Angle and James Storm. It is the absolute best of pro wrestling in 2011. And I know standards in 2011 are low. But James Storm, he gets in the ring with Kurt Angle. I'm actually kind of like, I don't want to say I'm getting goosebumps thinking about this, but like, he got in the ring with Kurt Angle for an interview segment on Thursday, and it was so unlike any of this other BS that you see on pro wrestling nowadays. Kurt Angle gets in there, and James Storm just cut the promo about how, you know, you win most of your matches because you intimidate people. And you have the match won before the bell even rings. You're Kurt Angle. You're an Olympic champion. You're a 13-time world heavyweight champion. I guess they're counting Olympic medals in there. But you've beaten the best in the world. But you know what? Eddie went off on the list. He goes, my dad died at 14. And my stepdad died at 16. My grandma died at 19. I just had to put my dog down last week. He goes, there's nothing you can do to intimidate me. I am not scared of you, and I'm going to go into the ring on Sunday, and I am going to beat your ass. And I can't even do justice to the promo that James Storm cut. This guy is like the best babyface in all of wrestling today. And seriously, looking back like 5 years at least, he is the best new rising star in wrestling in like 5 years. He is great in the ring. He is a great character, the cowboy James Storm. His interviews are absolutely outstanding. I said this on Thursday's show. Bobby Roode is great, You know, I don't want to say anything negative about Bobby Roode, but I think I said this last week on this very show. When America's Most Wanted was being broken up and everybody was talking about how Chris Karras was going to go on and be the big star and James Storm be lost in the shovel, I said back then, and you can go back and read the stuff that I wrote, the things that I said, James Storm was the star of that duo. You know, they didn't push him like he was a star, but he was a star of that duo. And amazingly, it was not until the Kurt Angle-James Storm match prior to Bound for Glory that people in the company, the people in charge of the company, watched James Storm and went, my God, this guy is good. And it's like, really? It took you this long to figure that out? But they finally figured it out. And now that they're letting him run with the ball, he is the best. I'm not kidding. He is the best. I wish he were a main eventer on Raw, like, every week. I mean, TNA is what it is. It's better, but it's still what it is. There's a limit to how far you can go as a star in TNA. And God knows they'd mess it up horribly if he went to WWE. But James Storm, he should be a main event top star on Raw. He's that good. And I don't know if we'll ever see it. But if you've not been watching TNA, I mean, you are absolutely missing out on just the greatness of James Storm. He is the best.
I'm not sure if I believe you, because everything you just said sounded way too dangerously close to pro wrestling.
It is. It is. He is a pro wrestling, southern, ass-kicking, no bones about it, babyface.
And you know what? It's an extension of him. That was when TNA first started, he was the Tennessee Cowboy. He was played up to be in a comedic role. It took a long time for that. And that's why I think, and I was one of those people that thought Chris Harris was going to go on to more success, because I thought, you know, size-wise and everything else was going to help him, because I thought I could see him in WWF. I couldn't see James Storm there, and I thought he was going to be portrayed in TNA forever as the wacky Tennessee Cowboy sidekick tag team wrestler sort of thing. But They've let him grow, and that's why I think they blew it so bad when it came to Roode and Storm, because you had two guys that people, they've been around forever. They are, for all intents and purposes, untouched, undamaged. And there's very few things in TNA that have not been completely, you know, wrecked or destroyed or infected or anything like that. They were pretty much clean for a feud, and I think they have blown it. But yeah, James Storm, as you've said, I mean, when Chris Harris walked out like a zombie on ECW, I think a lot of people looked back and saw what James Storm was doing in TNA and went, huh. And even though it was, you know, again, I feel bad for Roode, and there was all that stuff with Hogan and everything, one thing Hogan was right about was James Storm is a guy that everyone could get into. And I don't think he put it in those terms, and I don't think he maybe even meant it that way. But that was one true thing. Now, that's not to say that Bobby Roode couldn't be, or to say that you don't need other guys along with him. But, yeah, James Storm actually really is that good. And what a surprise. Doing pro wrestling things as an extension of himself as a pro wrestler, how shocking something like that works.
James Storm is like, you could tell when you watch him that he's like, I mean, idolizes Shawn Michaels. But you know, he's not as good a worker as Shawn Michaels. I don't think he's as good as worker as Randy Orton is nowadays. For those of you that haven't watched a lot of Randy Orton in the last 3 months, I don't know if all of a sudden he's feeling better. I know that he's talked about he's got a new workout that he's doing that, you know, he's hoping will prevent him from getting injuries. He's doing kind of a lot of explosive movements and training like that. I guess he learned it from John Cena. But regardless, he has just been on fire in the ring of late, Randy Orton. But, you know, James Storm is not the worker of a Randy Orton or the worker of a Shawn Michaels, but he is an upper echelon worker. And as far as promos, I mean, he's a better fiery babyface promo than Shawn Michaels. And literally, I'm not joking, he is my favorite wrestler in the world today. And I just want to put him over one more time. I think his match with Kurt Angle tonight is going to be awesome. They had an awesome match on television. And, you know, we talked about when it went down, the whole giving him the title and then Bobby Roode immediately won it and everything like that. You know, the way they did it, I thought the Bobby Roode heel turn in that match was just, like, outstanding. A masterpiece, I thought it was. But looking back and now in hindsight, I mean, the fact that James Storm is already champion, I think really hurts the story, you know? I think James Storm, if he had never been the, and I argued this at the time, they never should have put the title on him, even for the day. You know, it should have been, if they had not put the championship on him, you know, Bobby Roode versus James Storm for the title at Lockdown with like a 4-month build. I mean, that literally could have been, I shouldn't say that because TNA had a lot more momentum when Kurt Angle first came in and had that series with Samoa Joe, which, by the way, they screwed up, but that's another angle entirely. But if, you know, this could have been, if not the biggest match of all time in TNA history, it could have been way, way up there. But, you know, there's something about James Storm having already gotten the title that really takes the edge off the whole thing. If he'd never been champion before and he were going for the title against Bobby Roode, and Roode is a heel had maybe screwed him one or two times or something like that, I mean, this really, I don't know if it would have done 60, because I don't know if it's possible for TNA to do 60,000 buys on pay-per-view ever again, at least, like, no time soon. But if the potential were there, I'll just put it this way. Whatever the upper limit is for TNA pay-per-view buys in 2012, I think they would have hit it with this match. And they may still. But I think it would have been much more effective if he never would have won the title.
And another amazing thing about tonight, too, there's no attachment to this match. There's no dumb stipulation just to have a stipulation. It's just a grudge match with two guys who want to beat each other up.
That brings us to the final match of the evening. Chris Daniels and Rob Van Dam. It is the opener.
They'll beat each other up.
I just think this one is funny. All right, yeah, the stipulation, I guess Daniels has been doing promos on TV. He doesn't want to do a hardcore. He wants to do a straight grappling match, even though they did this angle on the last pay-per-view, and apparently they forgot. But anyway, that's the lineup, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment talking more Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final big segment here on the show, Wrestling Observer Live. Here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got a lot of news tidbits to get into here in the last 20 minutes. Don't forget, as soon as the show goes off the air, live running play-by-play of the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view at WrestlingObserver.com. And later on this evening, if you're a subscriber, Dave Meltzer and I, a brand new radio show, Wrestling Observer Radio, will be running down all the results of the TNA pay-per-view, all of the news from the weekend, more on Brock and Alistair Overeem. We'll have a ton of stuff on the show. You can listen to wrestling audio every single day, several times per day, in fact. I did 4 shows on Thursday. Only, however, if you're a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month. It's a couple of cups of coffee. If you love this show, there's no reason not to sign up. You can sign up for a month, and if you don't like it, never sign up again. But I think you're going to like it. If you like this show, you will love a subscription, either for yourself or have a friend buy it for you for Christmas. You will love it. Daily radio shows, as noted, sometimes as many as 4 radio shows per day. On average, 10 to 15 a week, sometimes 15 to 20. And if that's not enough for you, in the archives, thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Every show we've ever done, dating back to 2005, is available in the archives right now. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts. Names such as Quentin Rampage Jackson, Bobby Lashley, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino, Bret Hart has been on the show, Stone Cold Steve Austin, the list goes on and on. All of this searchable over at WrestlingObserver.com. So again, if you got a commute, if you work somewhere where you listen to audio all day, and you can never find enough good wrestling and mixed martial arts audio, well, you'll never have that problem again. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Sign up today, and trust me, you will love it. I guarantee it. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, speaking of Twitter earlier in the show, Miguel Torres got himself fired over a comment on Twitter. What are your thoughts on this situation? I know you're a passionate man.
My problem actually with this whole situation is more Dana White than anything. Miguel Torres, and I don't have the quote right in front of me. Apparently he quoted It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, a show on FX, quite an edgy show and a very, very good one, but a lot of nasty, mean humor on it. But apparently he put a line from that show up on his Twitter, a joke about rape, which was, again, when you write things down and people read them, you know, sarcasm and context sometimes just doesn't come pouring through, which is why you probably shouldn't do those sorts of stupid things. But he did it. And Dana White was coming off of Forrest Griffin making a crack about rape, and also Rashad Evans, who, frankly, to me, had the worst out of all of these things, making light about the Penn State disaster with, you know, Jerry Sandusky and raping boys when it related to Phil Davis, a graduate from Penn State. And he was hit with this on the Michael Landsberg show, Dana White was. He did not know about Torres's comments and was kind of blindsided by it. Went off, I'm sure was probably really embarrassed about it, and then fired Miguel Torres immediately afterwards. And I'm not saying Miguel Torres didn't deserve to get fired. I'm not saying that Forrest Griffin deserved to get fired. He immediately apparently took his down and showed incredible remorse for it right off the bat. I don't know who called him out for it, if it was responses or what exactly it was, or if it was his own conscience, but he did that. Rashad Evans, you know, nothing was really said. Dana White just basically said, well, I'm not going to, you know, generically fine him or something like that. I think that was a huge mistake.
I think what was so funny about the whole deal is Miguel Torres gets fired, and then Rashad makes his comment, and Dana's response is, well, what do you expect me to do?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. You just fired someone.
I expect you under the circumstances. This is, you know, you have to be, there are very few comedians at the highest level who can pulling a joke off like that when it's still incredibly sensitive and incredibly sensitive. We're talking about the rape of boys, and we're talking about cover-ups and incompetence and lots of other things and institutions of higher learning and police and everyone else being, we don't even know what the shakeout situation is other than it's pretty gross and disgusting and it's probably not going to get any better, and we know that. It would take a hell of a comedian to pull a joke off like that, a Carlin-level type person, and actually have it work where people wouldn't regurgitate in their mouth. I don't care if he was trying to sell a fight. I don't care how you cut it. He's not a stupid guy. That's the one thing we talk about with Rashad Evans. He's no dummy. So, you know, obviously they were going back and forth. I'm sorry, you don't break that one out in the heat of battle without having it somewhere in your arsenal that you were possibly going to pull out. Yeah, it may have popped the crowd. It may have made everybody say, ooh. But I think under the circumstances of the timing of it, with the wound still being open right now, the very least Dana White could have done, instead of doing the throwing your hands up and going, well, what do you want me to do about it? They're fighters, or whatever his stupid response was. It was maybe, how about contacting Rain and saying, you know what, Rashad? This may be a good time to, like, you know, donate maybe $50,000, because he said he wasn't going to fine him. Why do something like the NFL where you're just, you know, doing a fine and, you know, and you don't really believe in it? Well, how about this? How about actually putting it towards charity? Because it was a dumb comment to make. It was a sick comment to make. It may have been hyping up a fight, but he should be getting drilled a lot more for that, because just because of the timing and everything else around it. It was stupid. And Torres being fired under the circumstances, again, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be fired or something like that, you know, but with that said, you know, the same sort of thing. You know, at least his was a quote off a TV show. At least he could have actually said that, even though his Twitter's got a bunch of random nonsense like that. But, I mean, that was a perfect time for Rashad. I mean, at least try to do something instead of having a response coming out of it like, well, what do you want me to do about it? How about maybe donating some money and actually saying, hey, my guy screwed up huge here. I can't let that happen in my house. We're on Fox right now. There's a lot of eyes on us, people who think we're barbarians and idiots and everything else. I'm mind-boggled to anybody who could even slightly defend that in a promotional sense. Yeah, it may have been for promotional purposes, but there's no way you could have come up with that comment. There's a lot. Chael Sonnen's really good at this as far as, you know, insulting people, but not too much. You know, there's a line not to cross. How anyone thought that was going to be a line to jump on the other side of, to me, is just ridiculous.
First off, breathe. Second off, one thing about this that, you know, Dana may get defensive about everything that happened, everything like that, but one thing that is undoubtedly his fault is the fact that he is offering, like, monetary bonuses for the most creative tweet. It's actually a gimmick that UFC does. Every quarter, they're going to offer $5,000 to the person who has gained the most followers since the start of the quarter, which is fine. The highest percentage of new followers, which is fine. And also to the person who writes the most creative tweets. That's a problem because you're dealing with a bunch of fighters. And what is creative to you, Mike, and what is creative to me may be very, very different. And when you've got a whole bunch of different people who fight for a living, some of these, quote, creative tweets are going to end up being, in fact, very tasteless tweets. So really, he is, I don't want to say he's inviting stupidity, because I'm sure he doesn't want people to tweet stupid things. But when you're offering $5,000 to the people with the most creative tweets, you're going to have a bunch of people tweeting really stupid stuff. Because what Miguel Torres finds creative and funny is going to be very different from what Forrest Griffin and George St. Pierre and John Bones Jones, everybody else, Stephen Bonner, what they find creative. So you've opened up the floodgates here on Twitter when you do something like this. And, you know, another thing that you can comment on is Dana's comment a couple of days ago that Twitter is the... I think he called it the best advertising medium in the history of the world or something like that. And it's free, he noted. You know, I got a breakdown of all of the record-breaking success of UFC on Fox. And one of the things they were bragging about was the UFC on Fox hashtag on Twitter. And how 50,000 people used it during the Fox show, which they were very excited about. That broke down to 22,000 fans. Which, if you look at the peak rating for Fox, that was exactly one out of every 431 people. So if you go to an average, I can't even say an average indie pro wrestling event. If you go to a well-attended pro wrestling event in 2011, and you pack 431 paying fans into the building, that's the equivalent of exactly one of those people talking about it on Twitter during the show. That's nothing. That is nobody. So there are a lot of good things about Twitter, but as we've learned this week, a lot of bad things about Twitter as well. And I don't know. I don't know about this whole situation. It's leading to, I don't know, a lot of controversy, I guess is the best way to put it.
It's very cult-like. The people who, when you get into Twitter, apparently they are in a Twitter bubble and think that everyone is so influenced by it. Geez, it boggles. I mean, it's a great look. It's a great accessory piece. It really is. It's a great way to drop a funny one-liner and to do, you know, or to get out, you know, the contest things where they do. You know, I got tickets and I'm standing outside this bar. You know, come first people who come, you know, get the tickets. Doing stuff like that, it's great, but it's an accessory piece. It's not. It's not the greatest advertising tool. It's, I mean, I don't know how you can just, other than saying it's free and that our fans like it, I don't know how else you can justify trying to claim that to like a Sports Business Daily or something like that. I mean, it's just an accessory piece to everything else you're doing. This is where WWS misses it, and this is where I think a lot of businesses, when they just thought they could jump online and they would have a web page and they'd have a Twitter and a Facebook, and it's like it doesn't work. Well, it's only one piece of the puzzle, and so I don't agree with that at all. It just that I don't agree with. As far as opening up the floodgates, as far as having creative tweets and things like that, you know, yes, much like WWE too. And then I have a double standard when it comes to fighters. Because oftentimes it's like, well, what, you know, sometimes they're not thespians. What do you expect out of guys to get hit in the head for a living? You know, but with that said, again, John Jones knows better. Dana White had a chance to think about it afterwards, had a chance to do something and didn't.
I got a Twitter, everybody. At Brian Alvarez. I got 5,306 followers last time I checked. You can see pictures of my cats. You'll find out when free interviews show up. Check it out, everybody. I'm not going to say anything stupid on there. That's my goal in life. Now, George St. Pierre injured. That's kind of a big one. Blew out his ACL. He's going to be out 8 to 10 months. That means his proposed fight with Nick Diaz, again, not happening. And we seem to have some problems with injuries here in 2011, Mike. And I don't see it getting better in 2012.
Yeah, I'm starting to change my mind on this.
Oh, my bet with Todd?
Well, because as a fan, I mean, I love Condit and Nick Diaz. I do want to see that fight and everything, but, you know, GSP is GSP. But I got to say this. I don't know what you do, but I'm sorry. I think when you're getting up to the level of George St. Pierre, you have got to figure out a way to not train so hard and so much. I mean, I something's got to give with these guys. And, again, it's hard not to get hurt because you're fighting. You're fighting all the time. You're practicing fighting by fighting. So I don't know exactly what you can do, but it's obvious it's going to have to be ratcheted way back as far as the amount of physical contact you do in camps leading up to fights.
Yeah, there's been some big changes, obviously. We'll try and talk about those a little bit after the break, but you can just go up and head to WrestlingObserver.com if you want more on this, because obviously a lot to talk about in terms of big switches for the February show coming up in Las Vegas. We'll talk about it a little bit after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. UFC 143, we were talking about it after the break, taking place February 4th, Mandalay Bay. With George St. Pierre out, it is now Nick Diaz versus Carlos Condit for the interim heavyweight championship. Josh Koscheck will now be facing Mike Pierce, who has been lobbying for a fight with Josh Koscheck. And I don't know if that's exactly a money fight. So another big show, not so big now. But what can you do here in 2011?
That's true. I mean, and that's what can you do as you go along besides just keep trying to create personalities as best you can and keep trying to work them as best you can, because you're just going to continue to have this. The more shows you have, and again, I'm a proponent in a lot of ways of the amount of shows that they're doing, but they have to be very, very careful with how they spread out the talent.
All right, everybody, we are pretty much out of time, but as noted, in moments over at WrestlingObserver.com, live running play-by-play of the TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. Head over there and check that out. Then later on this evening, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up for a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll talk all the results of the TNA show, all of the weekend news, more on Brock Lesnar, Alistair Overeem, and all of the things we've been talking about today. And don't forget tomorrow, on Raw, it is a three-hour show, just like the Gilligan's Island tour. 3 hours. And Slammy award-winning episode of Raw, perhaps. They're going to be giving away some awards. It's the final build for the TLC pay-per-view as well. So for those of you excited for that show, hopefully Triple H will at least make an appearance on the program to hype up his sledgehammer on a pole match. Well, hanging above the ring. It's a ladder match. Triple H and Kevin Nash, that should be something else. All of the matches scheduled for TLC will be hyped one last time tomorrow on Raw. So check that out. We'll have a special radio show up after that program as well. Because as noted, 15 to 20 radio shows a week up at WrestlingObserver.com. But we'd like to thank Mike Sempervivi as always. Thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new show previewing TLC and talking all the news. So thanks again. Thanks everybody at Sports Byline, Sirius, and XM. Talk to you next week. Sports Byline Radio Network.